better serve their communities and to deliver the benefits of a clean energy future, electric utilities are transforming, making the grid smart by harnessing the power of data. To make this happen, utilities must have secure, private, utility-grade broadband connectivity to carry and protect their critical data. At Anterix, we provide the private wireless broadband platform that enables grid modernization, advancing utilities both individually and collectively as they realize the scale benefits of a nationwide ecosystem of utility communication networks.
To learn more, visit Anterix.com.
Thank you for meeting us at the intersection, where the worlds of energy and technology come together.
Presented by Anterix. For those of you listening for the first time, welcome. And for those returning listeners, welcome back. This is our first premier podcast kickoff of 2023. And we have a very, very special and esteemed guest. And I'm sure you all are going to enjoy it. I've been looking forward to it. I'm UTC's president and CEO, Cheryl Riggs. And today I am joined by Paula Glover. She is the president of the Alliance to Save Energy. She has more than 25 years of experience in the energy industry. She's a leader, a pioneer. Paula has been with the Alliance since 2021, and she's only the seventh president in its 45-year history. Very impressive. As president, Paula is responsible for working with the Alliance's diverse stakeholders to build lasting, consensus-based solutions. And it would come naturally because Paula also served as the president and CEO of the American Association of Blacks in Energy, which is a nonprofit group focusing on ensuring that African-Americans and other minorities have a seat at the table regarding discussions and development of policy, regulations, and environmental issues. And I'm proud to say I'm still a member of AABE, and it's a wonderful organization that's worked with UTC for many decades. So Paula, thank you so much again for joining us. Is there anything else you would like to share about yourself? Because I know you have done so much. That could be the whole podcast. It's just talking about some of the things that you have done in this industry.
Thank you so much. No, I'm so thrilled to be here with my friend, Cheryl Riggs, and just hello to all the folks who are listening. Thank you for having me.
I'm just so honored. I'm a baby in this industry. It's probably the only thing I can say I'm a baby in. Paula Glover was one of the first people. So kudos and shout out to Rob Thormeyer, who introduced us. He knew that she was a leader, a CEO, just a champion that I needed to be in touch with. But he didn't know, like you said, the friendship that would evolve. And I'm so grateful to him. I'm so grateful for you taking that call, because I know that your schedule is super busy. I just want to let everybody know too, because I can't wait. Our schedules have been crossed, but I just want to let everybody know Paula also has a fantastic podcast herself called Always Bet on Black, and it highlights African-American leaders in the energy and industries. Paula, I am sorry I wasn't able to make it last year, but I will make it as soon as you have time for me. But do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, sure. So Always Bet on Black actually happened kind of very organically out of the pandemic. And, you know, I've always been really very, very blessed and lucky to get to know and work with some incredible African-American leaders in this business, like just amazing people. And so I thought about all the questions that I get about, do you know someone who can do X, or do you know someone who can do Y, or just the conversations that I would have with them, and thought, you know, it'd be really neat for people to hear our journeys. Because they're so different, and said something to my team about it, and they ran with it when I was at Abe. And then all of a sudden they handed me a schedule and was like, let's get started. And it's been incredibly fun to get to know people and to hear their stories. And even I always walk away with something that I've learned and that I apply, you know, in my work life. And I'll think about it, and I'm like, man, remember when so-and-so said this? Yep, they were absolutely right. So that's the blessing in all of it.
And it is amazing. So I mean, maybe I'm not supposed to do this, but I'm plugging for, please listen to her podcast, because I think they jumped on it. Just like I was super excited when I heard about it, and even more honored when you even considered me to even be a guest.
That, sure.
Yeah, they jumped on it because the journeys, the stories, they need to be told. In our industry, yeah. We always talk about the underrepresented, the underserved, mm-hmm. whether we're talking about an issue, a technical issue like broadband or cybersecurity, whatever the area is. But your podcast and our journeys speaks to that and how we can serve and change that around from underrepresented and underserved. We want to take that under away and just make them serve and represent it. So that is fantastic. Yeah. So after more than 25 years in the industry, even though she for those, look her up. She looks like she's
like radio. 25.
No, she looks like she's 25. But after more than 25 years in the industry, what's the biggest change that you've seen?
You know what? The biggest change is this conversation that we are having, we've been having around justice and energy. And you mentioned, you know, when you introduced me that I spent this time at the American Association of Black Energy as a CEO. I, like you, have been a member of this organization for now, I don't know, almost 30 years, probably a little bit more than 30 years, super impactful for me. But this is a topic, while the term was not called energy justice, this is a topic that that association has been talking about for its entire 45, 46 year history. And so to see after 40 years, that language, you know, we've had a name for it, and to see all the different kinds of people who are now focused on justice for whatever reason, that is the biggest change I've ever seen.
And that is huge. I mean, I even from my lens, because I know when I had the opportunity to participate in a group on environmental justice, and as we were preparing, you know, we're like, okay, well, what is it? And we're researching, like you said, it has a term. And I remember telling my colleague, oh, I know exactly what this is, but I didn't call it environmental justice. So you're right, to see us have a term to bring more and more awareness that people, this is not just a conversation, it's a call to action with real change and support. So that is a huge change.
It's a huge change.
Yes, in so many areas, so many ways, very impactful. And I keep going back to the underrepresented, underserved, because actually, even through conversations with you, I even learned about really what that term meant. And who we're talking about. We're talking about so many groups of people. Just people kind of get caught up in their silo. Okay, well, this is the group we're talking about. No, we're talking about everybody pretty much.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, the reality. So that is a huge change. I have to agree with you. That was spot on. Well, like you said, you've been with ASE, serving as the president and CEO since 2021. But you have been on its board before that. You were involved with ASE?
Yeah. Yes. I was. I sat, I joined the board of the Alliance, I think in maybe the spring or summer of 2016. So I had the opportunity to be on that board with, again, a bunch of tremendous leaders and people that I did not know, which is always really neat when you're exposed to a sector of the industry that you don't typically work with all the time, which was, you know, the case for me. And I think additionally, certainly in that moment, being a woman of color and getting to serve on the Alliance board is prestigious. You know, it was not an organization that had been known for its diversity. And we had, when I joined the board, two of my mentors, one was rolling off, Rose McKinney James, and Carolyn Green, who of all the people that I've met and known in this industry, she has truly known me the longest, like from day one. And so to get to serve on a board with them, and now to lead an organization where Carolyn still serves as our treasurer, is such a pleasure. There is pressure because, you know, I think all of us for our mentors, we want them to be proud of us. And I certainly want Carolyn to be proud of me. I want all of the people who have supported and mentored me, the people who hired me, to be proud of me, and to feel like she was a great decision. Like hiring Paula was a great decision. And even when things don't go awesome or don't go exactly how I planned them, you know, that level of support is so important. And so I'm super lucky that I get it. But with the Alliance, my relationship with the Alliance, I think was started so long ago. And that may be why I'm so comfortable now, like how much I enjoy it and why I'm so passionate about it is because I was so familiar with the organization before I got there.
That is that you said a mouthful.
A whole bunch, yeah.
You said, and you gave voice to a lot of people, including myself. I mean, I remember when I first met you as a first-time CEO, just really not even believing, in awe that I was in your presence. The respect for not just the knowledge, but like you said, being one of a minority woman in the room, mm-hmm. where a room that is not necessarily the most comfortable room, and there's so much to learn from your experiences. Yeah. So yes, there is that. You want anyone who's poured into you to be proud of you. So like you said, make mm-hmm. a decision that is well done. And even if it's on a relationship level like ours, I feel the same way, that your time is so precious. And I just feel like the story needs to be heard. So as you know, I'm plugging away, because going back to why we're here at the intersection is we're here because I want people who know nothing about energy, wonder what's going on. I want them to find a place, where can you fit in? Because people like yourself have shown me finance background, accounting background, so-called numbers girl, there's room for you too here in this important work. Like you said, energy justice. And I know at ASC, you talked about energy efficiency, like affordability, you know, all that's mm-hmm. tied in. Economic yeah. growth, decarbonization, and so much more. So yeah. there's room for everybody, and we actually need everybody, as we Absolutely. See with all these attacks, and there's so many things going on. So what do you say about that? Like, if you wanted to, you know, help us reach the individuals, yeah. or they just pop in, and they're like, what is this all about, this energy sector, and what can I do here?
Yeah, I think, you know, I've reflected a lot on this, because I think, as I think about it, and the broader context of your question, which is really like, how do we diversify this workforce and bring people in? You know, I think this is an industry that's just really exciting. And, you know, long time ago, and I'll share the story, what really got me kind of laser focused on energy, and this is probably not quite 20 years ago, and in fact, working with the woman I mentioned, Carolyn Green, on an event, and we were doing something about energy and international, whatever. I can't even remember what it was. The Millennial Challenge had energy in 2000 as one of its focus areas for the world. And so I was doing some research to better understand why would energy rise to the top like that. Mm-hmm. And as I was researching and learning, like, all the things that this industry effectuates for the quality of life for people. And that in areas where people don't have access to electricity and energy, you know, it's not just heating and cooling, it's also a lack of access to medical treatment, yes. A lack of access to medicines, a lack of access to education, to clean water. Like, there's so many things. And so that was really the turning point for me, that when I saw how this little industry that I thought I was working in, right, just taking people's bills and trying to explain right. how you save on your gas bill, and no, you don't yes. need to do this, but really understood that, like, there's so many people around the world, there's all this other stuff that they also don't have access to, because they don't have access to what I was assuming was a basic that everybody had. Right, couldn't imagine that somebody wouldn't have electricity. So that really drove me and really had me like, this is the industry I want to be in. Right. This is the business I want to be in. And I'm a marketing major, so I'm big on niche markets. I understand the power of a niche market. And so I was okay with, like, I want to focus on the relationship that Black communities have mm-hmm. with the energy system. Right. And when I worked in utilities, I could still talk about that, even if that wasn't the number one priority, it was still important. I had opportunities to give it voice because people don't normally think about it, right? We assume that every community's relationship with our energy system is exactly the same.
Exactly.
And it's not, right? And now we know, like, now we're not only honoring that, we're actually recognizing that through the investments that we're making, right, through this administration. When we talk about energy justice and we're talking about infrastructure mm-hmm. and equity and all this other stuff, it really is an act acknowledgement that right. all of our communities relate to this system very differently. And if you live in a rural community, there are things that you have and there are things that you do not have, that you should have, that you do not have in terms of your energy infrastructure. If you live in a poor urban center, you may have lots of things, but you may have the inability to adopt new technology because you don't have broadband or the load in the grid isn't right. Like there's all kinds of things that connect us with this system, and our communities experience it differently for whatever reason. But that actually had me say, you know what, energy is a super interesting thing. And I think if we can talk about it that way, you begin to attract more people. But the other side of that, I would say, is this, and I've been experiencing this at in my hiring at the Alliance, is we've tried to diversify our staff. And I think my team has done an exceptional job at diversifying our staff. But we've also had to ask ourselves some really tough questions about what are we looking for?
Yes.
And challenge ourselves about our requirements. And an example would be, I want a diverse hire, or I want a diverse slate of people, candidates that I can consider, but I also want you to have 10 years experience. And so, but if we know that our sector is got 8% minority representation, we've already really made that pool super, super small, but the people who can apply for our position, because we want them to have all this experience. And so we started thinking about what are the skills that you need somebody to have, right? And how do they demonstrate those skills? Because we could teach them a lot. And in changing our own thinking, our workforce changed considerably, right? And it's been an amazing thing. And we've gotten comments from pretty people. I've got comments from people who will say, you know, when I looked at the staff pre-2018 and I look at the staff now, it looks so different, right? Better balance of men and women. Right. Better balance of people of color and not just African-Americans.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
It's a nice and we as a team benefit because we all have such different life experiences. And so we can all look at the same exact problem and see something completely different in it just because of the way that we walk through the world. Right. That's an amazing thing. And so I would say to our those in the audience who have the opportunity to hire. You got to think differently about who you're hiring and what you really need, right? And that there is power, there's such power in having a diverse team and a diverse workforce that as employers, maybe we need to work a little harder to teach people about our business, but we also need to give folks a chance. They don't have to have every single thing on the list to be successful. They don't. I'm learning that, right? That if you're willing to teach and someone is willing to learn, there's very little that people cannot accomplish, like that they can take that on. And so I think as we're thinking about this ecosystem that we're building here in terms of our industry, there is a lot that we can do right now, right? That's not, we need more kids to study STEM. We need to recruit at HBCUs and minority serving institutions, which are two things that we absolutely need to happen, like full stop. But just even in spite of that stuff, there are things that we could still do in terms of how do we hire? How do we assess candidates? What are we really looking for? What's the level of commitment that we have? How flexible are we willing to be? What are we willing to teach, right? Do we really need all 15 things on the job description or do we really need three? And like, are the other 12 nice things that we could have? But, you know, if I didn't have them, they're nothing burgers. And so I think, you know, for us in the industry, if we, if this is a focus of ours, and if this is what we are committed to as leaders, then we got to check ourselves and our own biases in terms of what are we expecting people to come in with?
I definitely agree. I mean, when I first started at UTC, it was similar to what you're saying. It looked very different. And that was one of the things that several board members commended me on. And they said, well, what about our board? It needs to be diversified too. That's a little more challenging, but not being the role that I'm in now. It's like you said, the first step is not just to handpick people, but is to change the mindset and the culture of the board to explain, for one, what does diversity really mean? How can we, you know, you really can't say diversity without saying equity or thinking of equity and inclusion, because even if we put people in place and they don't feel included, they're at the table, but they don't really have a voice. We still have not really achieved diversity. Mm-hmm. So you're right. We have to change our thinking. And for industry that has been doing things a certain way and it has worked for them, it's hard. It's very difficult. Yeah. That's why I think the energy sector is having one of the most difficult times when you talk about workforce crisis. And it's unfortunate because we need people in this area, like you said, STEM, which one of the things, not just changing even how we, but you know what, as I think about it, it's not even changing it. It's just like trying to figure out how to connect the dots to you. Like in the energy sector, a lot of times people refer family members, which is common. So do the same thing now. Refer your family members. Take the
message. And I will tell you, I have a son who works in energy efficiency. Never in a million years would I have thought that would have happened. None of my children seem remotely interested in what I did for a living, as long as like I could pay for your stuff. You got new sneakers, you got what you need. But watching him be interested in his own work has, and finding some interest in this work has been really neat. And so I agree with you, right? We need to spread the word. I have a young man that I just hired who was referred to me through my son, right? Young man that he knew. And so it can work that way, right? It can work that way. You put them in the lineup, you introduce them to people. And so I've been lucky, probably because I have kids who've just, you know, gotten out of college in the last 4 or 5 years. When they're looking for work, I'll say, hey, I know some people you need to talk to. You know, sometimes that works out. Sometimes it doesn't work out. But what I also see them do is tell other people, right? So I've seen my son's friends tell their friends to call me because they might be interested in energy and I might know somebody. Or I have cousins who will call me and say, hey, there's a guy I work with whose son is an engineer and he wants to learn more about environment. Can he call you to learn more about that? And I'm always like, yeah, absolutely. You know, and let me connect this kid to somebody else. Because I think, while that's right, we need a lot of people. So that's not a good way to build scale. Right. It's still a way to get our messaging out and to get people to think about us as a career.
Exactly. And to your point, the same thing for me, because I mean, as a finance or accounting background, I've had the pleasure of working in different industries. And I say pleasure because I get to learn the back end of how things are operating, and wow, this industry is generating that. And I'll be quite frank with you, the energy sector, it wasn't an attraction. I wasn't attracted to it. And I also didn't know much or hear much about it. I remember in my 20s, I wanted to be a celebrity accountant. And I did have the opportunity because I wanted to be around celebrities. So, you know, and I had the opportunity to work in a space where I did get to meet several people, but I also saw too, this is not all it's cracked up to be. But when I did get into the energy sector like you and started connecting the dots, because I had been exposed to all these other industries and just life, I realized, wait a minute, this is sexy. This is serious. This is life or death. This, you talk about serving your community, you talk about making an impact right here. And there are so many ways you can do it. Yes, you can be an engineer, but you can be a nurse. You can be a lawyer. You can, there's tons of, you can be a salesperson at with the technology partner. Like, we have technology partners. We just have to get that information out. Not only that there's the job, but how meaningful and impactful we're talking about. We need environmental justice. Well, we need people at the table to bring up the points of view that, hey, have you considered that, well, we're talking about putting solar roofs on people's homes, that their homes are not going to be able to handle it because a lot of them are older homes or just not really maintained very well structurally. Mm-hmm. So that's something, like I said, you have different opinions that will help us make better conscious decisions for our communities that we serve. And it will slowly take that underrepresented, underserved off. But we need people at the table who can actually speak from a place of, yes, I have my practical or my theoretical degrees and knowledge, but I also have practical life to know that my grandparents' home is very old. They may not be able to, we're gonna have to do some structural changes to their roof. And I don't know if they're gonna be able to afford that. So all of that to say, but like I said, I'm trying to stay focused because I'm just so, you know how we do when we get together, it's like a retreat. Talk.
I want to pick up on something. I want to, I think, shout up or amplify something that you just said, because I think it's important. Working this business is about being of service. And it may not seem that way to folks on the outside, but the folks who work in this business across sectors are about serving their community. And so, you know, just a reminder for, I think, all of us, and I think it's always a healthy reminder when we're coming in and out of storm season. Like, shout out to these guys, the linemen, the welders, the plumbers, the gas distribution techs, the platform guys who are out there in the Gulf. Like, all of these individuals really put themselves at great risk. It is why safety is so important to us as an industry. They are putting themselves at risk so that we can have the basic comforts that we require day to day. And so, you know, irrespective of how frustrated we may be with our utility company or how high the bill is or the service has been, you know, the service is out and the restoration is taking longer than, you know, any of us really want is the honest answer, right? Nobody wants the service to go down. Nobody wants that. Even with all of that, those men and women prioritize this work. They prioritize the customers, right? Their families are out.
Yes.
They leave home to try to get service back on, right? And I can remember when I was at AIM and through the years, right, meeting people who worked during Hurricane Katrina, who worked during Superstorm Sandy, who had to, right, leave their state, the derecho in Washington, D.C., right? They left home so that they could provide. That's what the, and that's what the system is designed to do.
Yeah.
And so for all of its frustrations, it's a good system.
It's a good system.
It's a good system.
It is.
And I just, you know, shout out to all the people who do that hard work. Because it is not without sacrifice, and it largely goes unrecognized.
Yes, and with that, you're right. And I tell people every time, and thank you, just thank you, and you too, the leaders, the decision makers. Shout out to you too, and many others that have come before and that are coming up behind us, because it is not for the faint. Number one,
no.
And it's not for the faint, because once you really connect the dots and realize this is life or death, you know, I used to say occasionally, oh, well, we're not doing brain surgery, you know, so, but I have to retract that statement and change it a little bit. We may not be doing brain surgery, but I tell you what, attacks on the power grid or you'll see how long we can last without power, without water, an attack on our water system. You want to hope that they have something in place to detect that and fix it very quickly before we realize, oh, wow, the water system has been attacked and thousands are dead. So you start to realize that your work is that critical. So, you know, shout out to you too.
And it's fun.
Oh, it is fun. It is fun. And, you know, another thing I say is diversity. We're gonna try to wrap it up because, like I said, we could be here. I want to say something to what you said about this is good work and it's service. I try to remind people, don't get so nervous when we talk about diversity, because sometimes people get a little nervous because it feels like we're trying to maybe put one group above another group. But the reality is, because this is life-changing for all of us, it impacts all of us. So if we all do something to lift it up, if everybody's getting broadband service, we win, because now we have a society that can be educated, whether it's remotely, online, or even if they don't have a school, the best school system, they have access to learning. They have access, elderly people, people who live in different remote areas, or may not have funding to get back and forth to several doctor's visits. They can do telemedicine and check in. Even for our mental health, we learned during COVID, you know, how it can be very challenging to deal with some of the everyday situations. And you might need emergency mental health, emotional health. Yeah. Now we can be connected. Family members who you couldn't see, you need that bond. We are human. So there's so many things that the technology of it is transcends, you know, yeah. way beyond it. Like you said, it's so big. So yeah. with yeah. all of that, I mean, I just want, I'm just, this is awesome. I hope people chime in, listen to you, reach out, look you up on ASE, see how they can get involved. I hope this motivates, if nothing else, get involved. Reach out to me, UTC, it would get involved. We want you to get involved. But it has been great. So before we wrap this episode up, and I hope we'll follow it up with an in-person visit, because it's been a minute, please leave us with anything you would like to close out this episode with.
You know, I think what I would want to say to people, and thinking about your remarks about diversity, and even, you know, as I think about the work we have to do around energy justice, yeah, it's hard work. It's work, though. Like, work is designed, you know, I always will put to my kids when they're like, you know, I'm just so tired from work. And I'm like, right, because it's work. Like, work. Yeah, that's what it is. You're going to be tired. It's labor. It's also meaningful.
Right.
It could also be really fun. It's also impactful. And so what I would say is we don't need to shy away from the hard work. We need to lean into the hard work, because shying away from the hard work is literally why we're in the situation that we're in now.
Wow.
We can't run away from it. Right? We cannot. And so this is the time for us to be our most creative. It is the time for us to be our most innovative. It is also the time for us to be our most empathetic, kind, and caring. And we're in a unique position, I think, and maybe that is the blessing that comes out of COVID.
Yes.
That we are literally all in the same place right now. Right? And so we've got this opportunity, and what we choose to do with it, right, is, and the result of that will be our choice, right? We can't say they never took care of it. We have the opportunity to take care of it. If we don't take care of it, it's because we decided we didn't want to do that. And I know for sure my family will not look back at me and say that their mother, grandmother, great grandmother, great auntie did not think it was important enough to handle. They will know that I gave it my best effort. And I would invite everybody, whatever that thing is that you're passionate about, give that mess, the hard work, your best effort.
Well said. And thank you, Paula Glover. And
thank you.
I hope people chime in. The title of this podcast appropriately is Industry Trailblazer. So please, if you want to hear from an industry trailblazer, Paula Glover, chime in. You said it all. It's good work, important work. You gave me a word for today, because I was up last night. My daughter got sick and I probably got back to sleep around 4, and then, you know, popping up. I was like, oh, tired, but I'm energized. I'm good now, because like you said, this is important, meaningful work. We need to do it. And I'm glad to be a part of it. I'm glad to be a part of it. So thank you. You've inspired me too. I got something out of it. So thank you.
And thank you for being my friend. I appreciate it.
So thank you. Thank you. And I hope to see you soon. Take care and talk to you soon, Paula. Thank you so much.
Thank you for meeting us at the intersection. For more information about the Utilities Technology Council, visit utc.org.